Entertainment provided. The younger masters at William's school had vanished gradually with the course of the war, to be replaced by older men emerging often from the retirement of years. The new history master, Mr. Politer, was old like the rest, but unlike the rest, he was a distinguished scholar who had the knack of making his subject interesting both to the expert and the lay mind. He was the author of several best-selling biographies on historical subjects. William, of course, did not know this. All he knew was that a subject that had consisted formerly of dates and wholly uninteresting facts had suddenly become alive and exciting. "Gosh," he said when he came home from school after the first lesson, "did you know about this Napoleon chap? Gosh, it's jolly exciting. Old Polly was telling us about him. Corks! It seems an awful long time to wait till next week to find out what happened." Mrs. Brown looked at him helplessly. The situation was without precedent. "Are you sure you're feeling quite well, dear?" she said. "Course I am," said William. Much to Mrs. Brown's surprise, this curious state of things continued. He was describing to her one morning at lunch how Napoleon had sailed in a small frigate without lights right through the English fleet on his way back from Egypt when a letter from Ethel arrived. Ethel had recently joined the ATS, the Auxiliary Territorial Service. "Oh, Ethel's coming home for 48 hours' leave," said Mrs. Brown. "Just for one night. Oh, dear, I'm afraid it'll be very dull for her. There's simply nobody to ask in." William thought of Ethel in pre-war days, moving always with a crowd of young men and maidens. Both girlfriends and boyfriends had now vanished from the village. "There's not a man in the place but the vicar and General Moult," said Mrs. Brown, "and they both bore her to death."
"I bet Mr. Politer wouldn't bore her to death," said William. "I bet that if you could get him to come in and tell her about Napoleon—"
"Now, don't be silly, William," said Mrs. Brown.
"But you've not heard him. I bet if Ethel could hear him, she'd be jolly interested. I bet if you asked Mr. Politer in for the evening, Ethel's at home."
"Now, don't be silly, William," said Mrs. Brown. "Ethel doesn't want to meet any of those old schoolmasters, you may be sure of that. She doesn't like old men, and she doesn't like schoolmasters."
"But he's not an ordinary old man, and he's not an ordinary schoolmaster," said William. "And I bet—"
"Now that'll do, William. Go and get the coals in." As William performed his wartime household chores, his determination to give Ethel an interesting evening through the instrumentality of Mr. Politer increased. At first, it seemed easy enough. He would give Mr. Politer an invitation, as from his mother, to spend the evening of Ethel's leave with them. A few tentative inquiries, however, among his schoolfellows showed that it was not to be done so easily. Mr. Politer did not accept social invitations, pleading his work as an excuse. He was, however, willing to give coaching to anyone and everyone who wanted it, and was extremely vague about sending in his bills. It was with considerable trepidation that William approached Mr. Politer one morning during break.
Please, sir, my mother says, could you come and give a little history coaching to my sister on Tuesday afternoon?
Mr. Politer looked up from the exercise books he was correcting.
Your sister, Brown? I didn't realise you had one.
Oh, yes, I've got one, said William. She's been away. She's coming back on Tuesday.
How old is she? Said Mr. Politer.
William considered. He was aware that Ethel, as she was, represented in its finest flower that local social life that Mr. Politer was trying to avoid. Better make her younger.
She's about my age.
She's been away to school, then, said Mr. Politer.
Yes,
agreed William.
How is it that she needs history coaching?
She's backward in history, but she's very fond of it. It's the only thing she's interested in. She's very backward all round.
Better enlist Mr. Politer's sympathy thoroughly while he was about it.
The school she's been to is a sort of school for backward children, but she's interested in history, and my mother thought that if you could give her a lesson or two...
Starting on Tuesday, did you say?
Said Mr. Politer, taking out his engagement book.
What time shall I come?
William was taken aback by the complete and unexpected success of his scheme.
I'd better explain about Ethel, he said. She sort of looks older than she is.
Mr. Politer nodded understandingly. Half-witted children, he supposed, often did.
And she always wears a sort of ATS uniform. It's not a real one, of course. Someone gave it to her for Christmas, and she's sort of taken to it. And the doctor says she's not to be crossed.
Again, Mr. Polliter nodded understandingly. Half-witted children, he imagined, would get these strange whims.
"I suppose she's seen psychoanalysts," he said.
"Oh, yes,"
said William, supposing that these were optical illusions peculiar to the feeble-minded.
"Yes, she's always seen 'em."
"Very well." Mr. Polliter marked the date on his engagement calendar. "Tell your mother I'll come round after school on Tuesday and have a little talk with Ethel and see, see whether I think she'll be able to derive any benefit from the lessons."
Ethel, as Mrs. Brown had foreseen, was disappointed by the disappearance of all her friends.
"Oh, goodness," she said in a tone of deep disgust. "Isn't there anyone left here? You'd think someone would have leave the same time as me."
William approached her apprehensively after lunch when she was curled up in an armchair by the fire reading a detective story. He was glad to see that she was wearing her uniform. William was fully aware of the magnitude of the task before him. Ethel could not bear old men or schoolmasters, so he had to clear the expected guest of both these stigmas.
"There's an awfully interesting man at our school, Ethel," he began.
"Uh-huh,"
said Ethel absently, without looking up.
"He's a young man," went on William, "but he's got to pretend he's old because of secret work he's doing for the government. He's got a little beard, but he's dyed it white to pretend he's an old man, and he's got some chemical to take his hair off to make him look bald. But he's a young man, really."
"Uh-huh,"
said Ethel again, turning over a page of her book. "And he's pretending to be a schoolmaster, but he's not really. He's got to pretend to be one because of this secret work he's doing for the government."
"What's he doing?"
said Ethel, raising her eyes from her book. William was nonplussed for a moment. Then inspiration came.
"Well, the government heard that a lot of secret Nazi agents were getting posts as schoolmasters and doing Nazi propaganda in schools to the children. Anyway, the government sent him down here to pretend to be an old schoolmaster and find out who's doing it."
Ethel was listening now. After all, the story was not as incredible as the one she was reading.
"What's he called?" she asked.
"Polliter,"
said William, and remembering Ethel's predilection for the higher ranks of the army, added,
"Major Polliter."
"I say, Ethel," he went on, after a moment's pause.
"Yes?"
"I told him about you, and he seemed jolly interested. I shouldn't be surprised if he came round to see you."
Ethel tossed her red-gold curls.
"He wouldn't have the impertinence."
"Why not?"
said William.
"No gentleman would just come to see a girl he's only heard of. If he couldn't get introduced in the ordinary way, he'd at least write and ask permission to call."
"Oh," said William. Gosh, if he'd known all the trouble it was going to be giving Ethel a good time, he didn't think he'd have started on it. Then, suddenly, he remembered that in the study was an ancient leather-bound book called Court Letter Writer. He took the book up to his bedroom and studied the index with frowning concentration. "From a young lady to a gentleman accusing him of infidelity." Well, that wouldn't do. "From a diffident lover to his mistress." Well, that wouldn't do. This might do. "From a gentleman of inferior fortune to a lady desiring the honour of her acquaintance." William turned up the page and, translating the F's into S's with some difficulty, read, "Madam, perhaps you will not be surprised to receive a letter from a person who is unknown to you when you reflect how likely so charming a face may be to create impertinence. Since I had the happiness, madam, of sitting in the box adjoining yours at the playhouse last night, I have been unhappy. Unhappy because I had no prospect of attaining a more intimate acquaintance with you unless it might be by letter. No words can express what I feel when I tell you that, though a gentleman by birth, my only dependence is an ensign's commission in the army and a legacy of about £500 left me by an aunt. I shall only add, dear madam, that my unhappiness or misery depends upon the reception with which this letter meets, and that I am, with unfeigned respect, your most obedient and most humble servant." All he had to do was change "sitting in the box adjoining yours at the playhouse last night" to "seeing you in Mr. Moss's sweet shop this afternoon," for Ethel had visited Mr. Moss to spend her sweet coupons, and change "ensigns," whatever that was, to "majors," and sign the letter Major Polliter. He might as well leave the aunt's legacy in.
For all he knew, Mr. Polliter had one, and it might influence Ethel, who was notoriously mercenary. Yes, it was a jolly good letter. He put Mr. Polliter's address and telephone number at the top of the notepaper and copied it out in small, fairly neat printed letters. Then he put it in an envelope, addressed it to Miss Ethel Brown in the same small printed letters, and placed it on the hall mat as if it had just fallen from the letterbox. It was an Ethel white with fury who rang up Mr. Polliter's telephone number a few moments later and demanded to speak to Major Polliter. Now, it happened that Major Polliter, a young man of pleasant manners and prepossessing appearance, had just arrived to spend an unexpected leave in the godforsaken little village where his father was carrying on his self-appointed war work of teaching. As his father was still in school, he answered the telephone. "Is that Major Polliter?" asked an attractive but extremely haughty voice. "Speaking," said Major Polliter. "This is Miss Ethel Brown," said the voice. "I consider your letter a gross impertinence, and if you dare to come to the house, I shall, of course, refuse to receive you." I say, hold on a minute," began the Major, but Ethel, who was now thoroughly enjoying herself, interrupted. "And if you dare to speak to me in the village, I shall complain to the police." With that, she slammed down the receiver before the bewildered Major could gather breath to reply. Mr. Polliter set out for his new coaching appointment immediately after school, and William took care to be hanging about the hall when he arrived. "Good afternoon, sir," he said politely. "Ethel's in here," and ushered Mr. Polliter into the drawing-room, where Ethel was curled up in an armchair in front of the fire, her detective novel on her knee. She wasn't really reading it. She was having a rotten leave. She felt not only bored, but regretful. That voice on the telephone had sounded young and pleasant. She wished she'd asked him to come round for an explanation. William had said something rather exciting about his being engaged on secret government work. The letter had probably been meant as a joke, and if she'd only had the sense to take it the right way. She had just come to this conclusion when the door opened and an old man that she'd never seen before walked into the room. Sitting there in the gloaming, it was after blackout time, and no one had bothered to draw the curtains and light up. In an armchair, her legs tucked up under her, her curly hair disordered, Ethel might well have been the age William had assigned her. The strange old man came across to her, put his hand on her curls, and said kindly, "So here's little Ethel in her ATS uniform." Ethel gave a strangled cry of terror and crouched back in her chair. Mr. Polliter was nonplussed. He had no previous experience in dealing with mentally defective children and was afraid lest anything he might say should increase the little one's fear.
Perhaps I'd better have a little talk with your parents first," he said uncertainly. "Where's your mother, my dear?"
"In the kitchen," whispered Ethel, still overcome by terror of this strange old man.
"Well, I dare say I can find her," said Mr. Polliter.
He went into the hall and, led by the unmistakable smell of rabbit pie, made his way into the kitchen. A few minutes later, William, still hovering about the hall, opened the front door again, this time to a tall, good-looking young soldier in Major's uniform.
"Is Miss Ethel Brown at home?" he asked.
"Yes," said William. "She's in here." The Major entered the drawing-room.
"Miss Ethel Brown," he said, "I'm Major Polliter. You rang me up this afternoon, and I felt sure there must be some misunderstanding, so..."
Ethel saw William hovering in the doorway and went to close the door, followed by the appreciative gaze of Major Polliter. William crept to the kitchen door and listened.
"But who on earth gave you the message?" he heard his mother say.
"William," said Mr. Polliter.
William crept to the door of the drawing-room and listened.
"But who on earth could have written it?" Ethel was saying.
The Major laughed.
"Well, I don't know. All I know is that I'm very grateful to whoever did. I say, are you really only at home for this one evening?"
"Well, yes, I'm afraid so. Do tell me, are you the Major Polliter who's here in disguise to investigate Nazi propaganda in schools?"
"Now look here," said the Major with another laugh. "Let's get to the bottom of all this. Who told you that?"
"William," said Ethel. William reached out for his cap and tiptoed towards the front door.
He realized that he had done what he had set out to do, assured Ethel an enjoyable time for her one evening's leave, but that no gratitude would be shown him, and that the best thing to do, in the immediate circumstances, was to go for a good long walk.